One of the Chevres sent a question over the email, asking, first by commenting and saying, this is such a beautiful limud, so exciting to get to know these inyanim in Torah. His question though was, and I think this is a question that every Ovid Hashem on some level is asking, so then now what? Like, what's the lamaisa of such a limud? So I just want to address that question just briefly, because we have a lot to do in this parak. We haven't yet seen, we will see more in this coming parak about what the lamaisa of all this is. And this is going to be a lamaisa which will touch on every aspect of life. Whereas if a person is learning the sugyos in halacha or in pnimius about putting on tefillin, so then what you'll walk away with, of course, is some type of a new yediyah and inyan in the midst of tefillin. By speaking about inyanim related to maisa bereishis, things which preceded what we know, what we've been taught about Maisa Bereishis, we're touching upon inyanim which relates to the entire tachlis of Maisa Bereishis. I think that there's a tachlis which comes out of what we've learned until now. By way of Hakdama, we know that there's, let's say, Machshava, Dibur, and Maisa. And a person can walk away normally with some type of a toeles in Machshava, Dibur, and Maisa. And in Chitzonia Sator and Niglas Sator, we view those three tracks as being separate from each other. There's the world of Machshava, the world of Dibur, and the world of Maisa. However, Pnimius challenges us to think a little bit. And when we try to observe Machshava, Dibur, and Maisa as a unit, it becomes clear that Maisa, Dibur, and Maisa, Dibur, and Machshava are not separate from each other. Machshava is considered to be the root of the Dibur and the root of Maisa. Pnimius always means that we have to look at something at its shayrish. And that's what we're doing with this limud. We're asking ourselves, okay, pnimius means that I should look at things at its shayrish, at its roots. So a limud like this is taking us back all the way to the very roots of as far as our minds can go. So this limud is very pnimi in that we've gone back to the shayrish. The shayrish of all Dibur and Maisa is going to be Machshava. And even within the world of Machshava, there's going to be Machshavas which are more Sharishtik, more Shairashi, than other Machshavas. We're going to speak about, there's levels of Machshava. There's Chachma, there's Bina, there's Das. You're familiar with these ideas. Understanding the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we've been highlighting this as we've been making our way through this process, we come to understand the greatness, the exaltedness of Hashem Yisbarach, and that already is a lamaisa. Because when we do tzitzis, when we do tefillin, when we daven, when we learn Torah, having this appreciation of who the Ribbono Shel Olam is the greatest gift we can possibly have. It changes a person's Yiddishkeit. Everything is touched because of his new understanding of Hashem Yisbarach. And as we proceed, and we understand more about who he is, and what he wants from the Bria, because that's what we're talking about. We want to talk about, what's the tachas of all this? How does putting a mezuzah on my door affect everything? This is the limud which is going to be coming out of these inyanim. And this is really an appropriate hakdama for this parak, because this is one of the longer prakim. We're going to see, as we make our way through this parak, a very much lamaisa, but a lamaisa which touches every aspect of life. So if you have an opportunity to the mitzvah of shatnez, or to bring a korban, or whatever it may be, the limud which we're going to be doing in this parak is going to really affect and illuminate everything which we do as Ovdei Hashem. Let's just chazer and to bring ourselves back to where we are after having a week gone by. We spoke about Hashem's ratzon to create the world, the fact that existence or something which was really higher than existence was filled with endless light, the Or Ein Sof. And Hashem Yisbarach made a tzimtzum, contracted that light, created a chala hapanoi. It was a Rishimu which was left. Hashem says, we need more light than that. He brings down a Kav, Yashar, into the Chalal HaPanai. And the merging of the Chalal, the Rishimu, with this Kav HaYashar creates this Adam Kadmon. And again, this is not Adam HaRishon. This is existence. The playing field for all of existence. And then we spoke about, towards the end of the last parak, that despite the fact that Hashem Yisbarach put the process of creation through so many tzimtzumim, there was one other tzimtzum which HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, was that after dimming the light of the Kav, he also created a system of spheros, kalim, that the Kav should run through these spheros, through these kalim, which are 10, and by doing so, the light will become somewhat minimized, dimmed in a way that all of existence can exist and not be overwhelmed by the endless light. And again, this is very lemaisa about the mechayas kulam. It's something which is lemaisa every moment. The fact that if a Jew knows that every moment Hashem is Baruch is giving me chiyas, that goes a very far way in terms of a person's avodas Hashem. And there are practices that a person can do. He can be misbinding on what that means, atam mechayas kulam, and try to, like Chabad Hasidus may suggest, that a person should try to think about what this means, this endless light, that I've been given light, life every single moment from this light. I mean, something to think about. So we're holding at this, the relationship between the Kav and the Spheros. So things get very exciting. Take a look here in Perek Gimel, if you have it in front of you. Kasher Nivru HaKelem. When these Kelem, which are the Hema Esther Spheros, these 10 Spheros were created, what was their formation? Hayu HaKelem Echa Lamata Mechaveri. The kelim were situated one beneath the other one. Kamavoy b'hakdam ha'akademis, like we explained. V'lachein, therefore, b'rishayna kishiyardu ha'aris la'kelim, when the light, this kaf ha'yashar, enters into the kelim, into these spheros, nechnesu ha'aris kol kol ha'kelim l'seicha kli ha'rishayna. The fact that they're in this straight line means that all the aura is going into each kli one at a time. Now let's take a step back for a second and understand the following. If there are 10 kelim, each keli is created to contain a light. That's the purpose of the keli, is to receive the light. If there are 10 kelim, there must be at least enough light to go around for 10 kelim. Okay, so now we have at least 10 kelim worth of light coming down. Hashem is bringing this light now into this Chala Haponi. He's got everything situated. He's got his kelim, and they're lined up. They're stacked on top of each other, and the top keli is looking at this light coming down. All that light is coming into that keli. Let's continue. The nimsa shekibel gamas ha'aros ha'tachtonos she'enu magiyah l'chalko. That means that the first keli is taking in light which doesn't belong to him completely. He's also taking him some of the light from the other kelim. So he adds in something here. V'nisgo'e limleich aleihem hu levadai. Now, had he let the light pass through him which doesn't belong to him, all would have been good, right? But he was misgo'e. That the keli, the sphere, had a gaiva. Now, of course, you're all wondering, what does that mean, that the keli had a guy? But we'll have to explain all these things. This is one of these chapters which needs a lot of explanation. One of the reasons why it's so long is because there's a lot of commentary on the sides. And I would just at first, like we've done in the past, try to work our way through and make some stops along the way, but to really not to be over on tafasta merubah lo tafasta, like the kelim did. So, v'nizgaya limleich aleihem hu levadai. So the keli was misgaya. You could just note your questions. Hopefully we'll address them in Tisha. The keli had a gaiva. He wanted to rule over all the light. He himself, he wanted to rule over all the light. B'li hishtatvus im zulasai. By himself. Without any outside participation. Turning the page. Aval hayoyiz shakili shalai lai hayamuchan l'kabal rakha ayres shalai. But since his keli wasn't prepared, wasn't made for the purpose to receive all the light, only that which belongs to him, Hutzrach lehisrachiv, he needed to widen, to expand. Yoisim yidei lekabel shaharis, more than he should have, in order to receive everybody else's chelik. V'lo haya yachal lesavlam. Problem is that he wasn't able to contain all the light. He wasn't prepared for that. He was only prepared to hold his light. Doing so called the following. V'nispaka, it cracked. V'nishbar, and it broke. Hakeli, this keli. V'nafal lemata, and it fell below. Okay, these are questions. What does it mean that it fell below? It fell below where? Let's see. Now, what happened to the ore that was passing through these kelim? Va'or shel kli zeh, the or which belonged to this keli, chazer lamala, went back up. And the lights continue on. Va'or shel shar hakelim, that the lights which belonged to the lower kelim, they continue down. Yoradu lahakeli shetachtav. However, v'chazra v'nishna hadavar hazeh, this process repeated itself. That the keli was misgoeh, he saw that he had more light than his keli was able to hold, and he really pushed himself to try to contain it. Shakli hasheni ratza gam kimlim lechal mashatachtav, he wanted to be the king. V'loi haya yachol lahachzik kolayreis shetachtav ad shenishbar. He also couldn't contain the lights which didn't belong to him. V'chein b'shar hakelim. And this was true with all of the kelim. Now he qualifies the statement on the sides by saying that this really didn't take place with the first keli. It actually took place with the fourth keli. He's beginning his conversation talking about the fourth keli. I'm just pointing that out because as we go along, these things will start to understand themselves. But be it as it may, we see that there's a concept here that the light is passing through kelim. Each keli tries to take that which doesn't belong to him. He wants to be the melech, and by doing so, it causes a shvira. So he's going to explain this qualification which we just mentioned. We spoke about 10 kelim. Ach kol zeh haya rak im hazayin kelim hatachtoinim. What I've just described, he says, took place with the 7 lower kelim. Because we know that there's 10. So what about the first 3? Aval gimel kelim el yoinim, but the first 3 kelim, letzad hayoisim gevoyim, because they were very great, zakim umayirim, that they were very pure and bright. So we're seeing from here, Rabbi Sai, that there's a difference in the kelim, that not all the kelim are the same size, and not all the kelim are created the same. Okay? Hayu biyecholtam lizbo l'lahachzik ha'ar hagadol l'chein lo nishtabru. Therefore, they were able to contain, to expand, and to be able to hold all the oiris. And they didn't need to break. They were affected, that's what he's going to say right now. Nevertheless, there is some pagam, deficiency, which occurred to the 3 higher kelim. Kevan sha'ayideh ha'shvira, why is there this pagam? So he explains that because of the shvira of the 7 lower kelim, nimna mehem lemalais tafkidam lahashpia lahazayin tachtonos. Really, the aftermath of the shvira is really what affected the first 3 kelim. So what he's pointing out here is that, but he's not really speaking it out, we need to, is that these 10 kelim can be divided in many ways. They each have a different personality. As we're going to explain, each sphere has a name and a certain tchuna, and they work together. There's a certain symmetry and an achdus which the kelim should have. One of the ways to divide the kelim, when we speak about them as a unit, is 3 and 7, the top 3 and the lower 7. The relationship is one of a mashpia and a makabel, that the top 3 are considered to be mashpiim, givers, and the lower 7 are considered to be takers. Somewhat like what we described before. So we're going to see that the first 3 kelim, which we're going to speak about, are going to be, well, we know that there's keser, chachma, bina, and das. And then there's the 7 lower ones, which is, we'll just mention them, chesed, gvur, tiferes, netzach, hod, yisod, and malchus. Right? Those are the 10/11 spheres. The reason why I say 10/11 is because we're very makbid in Kedusha that there's only 10. And the klal is that when we mention Keser amongst the 10 spheres, we don't mention Das. And if we mention Das, we don't mention Keser. Okay, that of course has a reason. We're not going to go into that now. That's not our sugya. But the idea though is, let's speak about Chachma, Bina, and Das, which can be called for short Chabad, which we know Chabad Chassidus stands for Chachma, Bina, and Das. Chachma, Bina, and Das are different elements of the intellect. And so we know, like we spoke about before, that the machshava is considered to be a mashpia, it's a giver, because it provides the dibur what to speak about. It provides the ma'isa, our actions, what to do. Right? The brain is the general, which gives orders to the body, the mouth to speak, every part of the body to act, to move, to do. So in that way, the machshava, when we look about it, we look at it from a pnimius perspective, we can understand machshava as being a mashpia, as being a giver. It's going to give to the dibor, it's going to give to the ma'isa, which are going to be the seven lower spheres. With that being the case, when there's a breaking in the lower seven spheros, that means the machshava is left to think, but has nobody to give to. And that hurts. That's painful. So therefore, the breaking of the lower seven kalim is going to have a consequence to the three higher kalim, because now they're left with nobody to give to. And he gives a mashal, which the Gemara actually gives us in Gemara Pesachim. Al derech mashal li isha menekes. A mashal to this is a woman who's nursing. Shimnech labana, that if the child becomes ill, ve'ena yachid lahanekosai, and she can't nurse the child. Right? Again, the mashal has to represent the nimshal. The child is sick. The receiver is not present. Yesh la yisurim mehachalav shenishra b'kirva. So now, the amount of chalav, which should be given to the child, which is not being given to her, will cause her pain. Ukamaykin haya b'gimel rishonos. So too the gimel rishonos, this ktsas pagam which we're speaking about, kishenishbiru hatachtonis, when the seven lower kelim were destroyed. Now these three higher spheres are not able to fulfill their purpose, which is what? To give to the lower ones. And for this purpose which they were created for, causes them this pain. Which is by just parenthetically, this idea of the pain of the three higher kelim because they can't give. It's very interesting that, as we see here, that there's three different forms of, we're going to see that there's really three levels of breaking. There's going to be the seven lower actually broke, and the top three went through different forms of breaking. What we see is that a person can be in pain because he breaks, because he's trying to receive. And there's other kelim, the three higher kelim, they broke or they suffered because they wanted to give and there was nobody to receive. So we see that there's two different elements of pain. If a person is a mashpia, he's a giver, he's in pain because he has nobody to give to. And you can have some people that they're in pain because they have so much, that they're taking in so much, that causes them pain. This is going to have a very, very lamay siddik application in terms of a derech and avodas Hashem. We speak about the pnimius of inyanim. What this is teaching about us about mamish day-to-day things. Everything, not just day-to-day things, moment-to-moment things in life in terms of what Hashem Yisbarach wants from us, what's considered to be tikkun, what's considered to be shvira in our everyday life. I'll just point out, actually, since he's about to go into a different direction, just b'derech limud. Let's just talk about for a moment this idea that the seven lower kelim broke because of the gaiva which they had. So, the Ari points out, we mentioned this before, that in next week's parsha, Parsha Vayishlach, the end of the parsha speaks about the malachim, the kings of Edom, and how the Torah says, Vayimlach Vayamas, that he ruled and he died. Until it comes to the eighth king, which is called Melech Hadar. Melech Hadar doesn't die. There's no mention about the death of Melech Hadar. That Melech Hadar, which doesn't die, the Ari has many kavanos and unbelievable insight into the Ramazim, into understanding this Melech Hadar and how it refers to the Olam HaTikun. But the seven kelim are merumas in the Vayimlach Vayamas of the seven kings in next week's parasha. Again, it's one of those things that, and this is classic, we spoke about this before, you're reading through this and you're like, what does this have to do with anything? But where in Pnimius HaTorah, it's everything. Mamish everything. Everything very relevant to Ma'aseh Bereishis, but again, everything which is relevant to Ma'aseh Bereishis is relevant eternally. The breaking of the Zion Kalim, which is called Vayimlach Vayamas, we spoke about before, he wanted to be king and that's why he died. When we speak about Musar, we speak about Chassidus, we speak about any Derech in Avodas Hashem, we usually speak about many different types of Midos. You open up an Orach HaTzaddikim, for example, right? Or any Musar Sefer. So you have your choices. Yeah, it's like a menu. You could talk about the Midah of Simcha, you could talk about Atzvas, you could talk about Gaiva, you could talk about Anava, you could talk about Taiva, you could talk about Kavod. You could talk about all different types of Midos. There's many of them. Many, many. Pnimius, of course, asks us the following question. Take me to the root. This looks very overwhelming to me, that there's all different types of Midos. That means today I'm going to work on this Midah, tomorrow that Midah, maybe a week this Midah, and maybe a month the next Midah. What we want is that we should understand, we should have a derech in Avodas Hashem, which we can work with, which we see results, that we're moving forward in something, but in a way of clarity. Clarity usually means, how do I get to the shayrish? A person's learning a sugya, or if he's doing something in work, and he sees that there's a lot of details in front of him. The question that a thinking person asks himself is that, I'm not trained, I'm not well-equipped, I'm not going to be successful, I have to look at this as many pratim. A person wants to be successful in any inyan. He can do it in a pnimius way. And pnimius always means take me to the shayrish. Take me to the root of the issue. What pnimius HaTorah says is that it looks at Avodas Hashem and it says take me to the pnimius, take me to the root. And what we see from understanding Ma'aseh Bereishis at its roots is that the root of all shvira, the root of all lack of success, is rooted in the meat of gaiva. The ich, the me, the I. That each keli looked at this unbelievable shefa which is coming down, and it said, I want all of it. And that caused his shvira. So that gaiva, that midah of malchus, the midah of malchus, is what caused the breaking. What that teaches us is that the root of all shvira is in gaiva. And the Sfar Maglishim expand upon it, and they say, let's say a person has a midah of taiva. He's misave, he wants something. So, where does the wanting come from? It comes from the word before it. I want. The I. So therefore, by taking a look at Midos, that's why I'm called Gaiva, the Kisei HaKavod of all Midos Rose. But Gaiva is the cause of all the Shvir of all the Kelim. Every single person is a Keli, and he's here to receive from Hashem Yisbarach. If he tries to take more than what Hashem Yisbarach is giving him, that causes his breaking. It's that greediness. If a person, and again, even if a person is getting exactly what he wants per se, what is due to him, that greediness will cause the shefa to have to be tainted. If a person wants more than what's due to him, so it causes a shvira. The breaking is because a person is trying to take more than what he has, not because a person is lacking. Right? This is a shift in perspective. It could be that a person is an ani, that he's suffering, that he doesn't have, not because he's truly an ani that Hashem is not giving him. Could be that Hashem has given him, that Hashem is giving him. But his whole machshava is rooted in, I want more than what Hashem wants to give me. And so therefore, the reason why he has nothing left, and the reason why he's an ani, is because his whole mindset is skewed. He's trying to take more than what Hashem is giving him. Maybe Hashem is giving you a lot, which is really due for somebody else. But you're trying to hold on to everything, and therefore you're breaking. And the klal is, the Gemara tells us this, if a person tries to take that which doesn't belong to him, not only does he not get which doesn't belong to him, even that which is due to him, he loses out on that. This is a very important perspective when it comes to tzedakah. When it comes to tzedakah, the Racham HaKadosh tells us in Parshas Ki Seitzei, the pasuk says, Ki yihyeh becha evyon, when there will be an evyon becha, translated as in you. What does it mean, an evyon, an ani in you? So he explains, and this is really rooted in the limit we're talking about, that there's a system. That there's a system that Hashem brings Shefa down into the world. What happens is that many times a person's Shefa, which is being given to him, is not completely for him. Hashem is giving me, or to you, Shefa, which belongs to somebody else as well. We see that in our own families, right? If a person goes out to work and he brings home a paycheck, so he doesn't say, oh, then this paycheck is all for me. He has a wife, his children. And then he has to look outside the box and say, who else? And so therefore, we'll say that there's a miser. That there's a meiser which really belongs to somebody else. It belongs to the Kohen, it belongs to the Levi, it belongs to the Talmud Chacham, it belongs to the schools, it belongs to the shuls, whatever it may be. Whatever organization it may be to, there's a meiser. And the reason why there's a meiser is because of the 10 spheros. The 10th one is called Malchus. Called Malchus. And that's the part which broke. The part which broke, like we said before, vayimloch vayamas. Just for a little added detail, hopefully this won't be confusing. When we speak about these 10 kelim, so in our minds we see, let's say, you know, of course this is not what they are, but we see maybe a red keli, a blue keli, a yellow keli, a green keli, and this is very accurate because every keli corresponds to a color. Every sphere corresponds to a color. Everything in the world goes back to these spheres. These are the building blocks of creation. We'll get to that, Mir Hashem. Right now we're just looking at it as up there, way out there, as the Kaaba is coming through the 10 spheres. That's where we're holding. But as we come to understand these spheres, we're going to understand that we're interacting with spheres everywhere. Everything is a manifestation of spheres. These 10 kelim, so let's say you have the Kli of Chesed. Chesed is comprised also of 10 spheres. That means that Chesed has what's called a Chesed Sheba Chesed, a Gvura Sheba Chesed, a Tiferes within Chesed, a Netzach within Chesed, and that's endless. That goes on forever and forever. So the Ari explains, and this is just a little more detail to understand what we're trying to bring out, that when we speak about the sphere of the Kelim, and again, the Simbad is endlessly deep, when we speak about the breaking of Chesed, really what broke was not the entire Keli of Chesed. It was only the Malchus of the Chesed. The Malchus within the Gvura. The Malchus within. Why the Malchus? Like we said before. Vayimloch bayamas. The fact that he wanted to be king. And the meat of the king is the eye. The king is the part of the nefesh which is able to say, me. It was that me, they called the Malchus, which had and experienced that shvira. Vayimlech vayamas. And so therefore, says the Archem HaKadosh, ki yiyye becha evyon. When there's an evyon, becha is literal. In you. In you means that there's a shefa which is coming my way, which really doesn't belong to me. Hashem has given me more because He's entrusting me that I should be a giver, that maybe I'm like a higher kelium, a higher sphere to give to those below me. And if I try to hold on to that which doesn't belong to me, so then not only did he not get which belongs to him, I shatter chas v'shalom and I'm not left with anything. So we can't look at an ani on the surface. Of course, it doesn't mean to say that this is the root of every single situation of anius. We don't understand Hashem's ways completely. They're infinite. However, what we see from the roots of creation is that really Hashem is providing. He provides freely, and everything is a matnas chinam. But misa, the lower seven kelim, the pagam is that if it tries to take which doesn't belong, that's called the vayimlech vayamas. That's the breaking of the kelim. So therefore, ki yihye becha evyon, if there's an evyon in you, says Aram HaChaim HaKadosh, that you have his chelek, be assured that you give it to him, because if you don't give that maiser, if you don't do what's appropriate with that chelek called the malchus, which really is the me, and you try to take with that me more than what's due to me, then everything suffers. So therefore, in Pnimius asks us to look at everything in a shayrish, and the shayrish of everything is going to be gaiva. And so therefore, when we take a look in the Sfarim HaKdoshim, which are rooted in Pnimius, which is the Sifri Hasidus, of course, is a Derech Hashem, which is rooted in Pnimius HaTorah. It's one of the very big distinctions between Musar and Chassidus. Chassidus is a derech and avodas Hashem, which is rooted in the teachings of Pnimius HaTorah, whereas Musar is not. Musar is something which is a different type of a limud. This is not the time to speak about the difference between Musar and Chassidus. What we're just highlighting is that Chassidus is a derech in Pnimius, and therefore, when you look at the Sfarim HaKdoshim of the Tzaddikim and the Talmid Baal Shem, they didn't speak about Midas in particular as much as they did about Gaiva and Anava, and those. Gaivan Anava, of course, can be found in Musa Sfarim, but in the Sfarim HaKdoshim, they have different names. Many times they're called Gaivan Anava, but often they're called Yesh and Ayin. Yesh and Ayin. Yesh means something which is, and Ayin means something which is not. It's a Pnimius way of understanding the meaning of Anava. And so therefore, what Yesh and Ayin does is that Yesh is speaking about that Nikud of Gaiva, which is Koilal, all the Midos Ros. And if it doesn't have to be called the Midas Rose, we'll speak about that in Mit Hashem. And Ayin is a type of an Anava, which means like a bittel. Which means to say that when I look at that Shefa coming down and I completely remove myself and I allow it to pass through, so therefore it doesn't break. But you see this B'chol Yom, let's say a lottery winner, yeah? This is just a very extreme example of that. I think it's statistically proven that almost all lottery winners, they lose all their money or they go crazy. It's just a total disaster. Why? Why should that be? You hit the jackpot. It's what you've been waiting for. Right? The Torah is that that's called Shvirus HaKelim. You don't have the Kelim to be able to manage $100 million. The first thing that a thinking person would do is that he would not get rid of it, but he would give it over to somebody else and put it somewhere and just to spend a lot of time using that money to be able to pay people to teach him how to use that. You need to know how to use that. So if you're a Keli and you're uninformed and you have some type of a gaiva and you see all this shefa coming down and you're so happy to take it, so when you take it, boom, there's the shattering of the Keli. And you're left with nothing. It's just a huge disappointment. Right? That's an extreme example, but it's very practical in our lives that whatever's coming through, whatever Hashem Yisbarach is giving us, we have to be understanding that it's not just the halacha in Torah which says, okay, you should be a good person, you should give to other people, it's not, don't be so greedy, and then a person has he has these thoughts, what do you mean? It was all given to me, then why shouldn't I take everything? Do I have to really be so nice? Torah says, yes, you do. Because Hashem Yisbarach is not giving you because it all belongs to you. You're the Keli, which is receiving now because there's people under you. People under you, and it's just passing through you. Of course, this is a very pnimius understanding of things, and I hope that we're able to appreciate the difference of seeing it how we may have understood it before and how pnimius teaches us to understand that. A little bit more time, so let's continue on. And maybe Charlie in will address some of the questions which come up. But if we start to address the questions, then again, we're going to have a hard time moving forward, and that's what we want to do, is to really understand the Sharashim, and whatever we can do on the side, we'll try to address those as well. But of course, there's still more questions which need to be addressed here. So let's turn the page. Now we're on page Dalet. So the Ayyadei HaShvir. So now that we have breaking of Kalim, each Keli thought to take which wasn't due to him, and that caused the shattering of the Kalim. Nasu Gimel Dvar. There are three results, three consequences from the breaking of the Kalim. Right? It's an amazing thing, Rabbi Tzai, that if you had to create the world, I don't know who would have thought of creation like this, right? It's like, it just seems like there's a challenge after a challenge. Like Hashem Yisbarach is obviously teaching us something with that, but he's doing this with an intention to teach us about, again, how great he is, that even the Kalim weren't able to hold this light. But it's so out of the box. V'yidei HaShvira Nasu Gimel Dvar. Through the Shvira comes out three things. One, Aleph. Mihashivrei kelim nivru haklipos v'hachitzainim v'koyeches hara. Now, we haven't seen anything until now about anything ra, anything bad. We've talked about, you know, some consequences, unfortunate. Of course, they're not unfortunate, they had the creation of the world, but we've talked about challenges until now. But we haven't said anything about what he calls, and he used three different lashonos here, klipos, chitzonim, kochos hara. Okay, we're probably more familiar with the word ra, kochos hara. But these are other names which are associated with the dark side, which of course in Sfarim is called the sitra acha, which is targum for the other side. A klipa is a term here which you may or may not be familiar with. Chitzonim, which means the outside, and kochos hara. Not that they're three different things, although they can be, but he's just trying to highlight the fact that all of these different types of terms were created with the Shvira. Okay, we need to know where the creation of Ra comes from. Okay. And what is the purpose of this creation? Sheish lahem hakoyach lahatos es ha'adam alahachtiyo chas v'shalom. Kadosh Baruch Hu created a system of nisyonos, the possibility for bechira and nisayon. And the breaking of the kelim was the process which Kadosh Baruch Hu chose to create a toiv and a ra, a right side and a left side, the ability to make choice. If a person engages, if he makes the wrong choice, if he chooses the klipa, so the klipa itself will cause a person to suffer. Because the klipa wasn't created that a person should engage in the klipa. It was created that a person should not choose it and to choose what he's supposed to choose. It's just so much to talk about. It's hard to decide whether or not to move forward or to speak about this sinyan. Let's continue on to discuss the four different aspects of the klipos, and if we have time, we'll maybe we'll talk about this, or maybe next week, or maybe we'll leave it to Charlie. Let's see. Ube'elu ha-klipos yish dalet sugin. With these klipos, there are four types. There's four types of klipos. Shloisha mehem nikraim shalosh klipos hatmeos. Three of these klipos are called the three klipos which are tamei, which are utterly ra, so to speak. And they're mentioned in the Merkeves Yechezkel. when Yechezkel had his vision of the Merkava, he mentioned these three things. And of course, the Ari, the Zohar Kodesh, sees these three things are not just descriptions, but as very fundamental, monumental understandings of the Shoyrish of all Ra and Klipos. We'll talk about the word Klipa, Mitzvah. Behem Ruach Se'ara, which I guess means a whirlwind. Ve'anan Gadol, great cloud. Ve'esh Mislakachas, and a certain type of a fiery fire. Which he says, Shehem Bechinas Ra Gomor, which is considered to be utter Ra. And he's throwing in things here as he's moving along, which we haven't really spoken about, but he's using these terms now as he's passing through. And it's not possible to fix them. So what he's implying right now is that we have to fix these things, right? He says it's impossible to fix them. He hasn't said anything about fixing them yet, but he's saying that these three klipos, of the four, are a type of a klipa which are going to be difficult to correct and to fix them until the times of Mashiach. But again, let's just pause for a moment. We see from here that there's something called klipos. There's four of them. Three of the four are really out of our jurisdiction. We really can't work with them so much yet. That's going to be left for the times of Mashiach. Just to point out, what we see from here just right away is that Yemosa Mashiach doesn't just mean like the end game. Like we think that when Mashiach comes, when the shofar is blown, everything's going to be, oh, great, everything is great, but we know that's not true. The coming of Mashiach means the very initial process of the tikkun that Hashem wants. The very long road, which we have from the time, let's say, the shofar is blown, whatever that moment of the beginning of the geula is, in a revealed way, it is the beginning of the next process. But, of course, what Hashem wants from us is endless, endless, but just from what we can understand, it's the beginning of something greater. So, for example, we see from here that there's a certain tkufa in our history called the times of Mashiach that will be able to fix these three klipos. Which means to say that right now we're working on only the fourth one. But there's a job that Mashiach is going to do, which is going to invite us into a whole new chapter of tikkun, which we're going to be involved in. We're involved in the tikkun. What we see from here is that this whole process of shvira, we're going to see more about this topic, that the whole process of shvira is one that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is creating a situation where Hashem wants us to partner with Him into fixing that which is broken. Almost like a father that he makes a puzzle, and then he destroys, mixes it all up, and then he says, okay, now I want you to put it back together again. Of course, that's for a purpose that Hashem has, a very deep purpose, what Hashem wants from that, but Hashem is creating a situation of Shvira, as we'll see, because He wants us to partner with Him in the rectification of the world. But again, he's not there yet, he's just passing through, but he's mentioning that just the Adam. Let's just finish this last paragraph. I'm sorry if you have to go. Let's just finish this last paragraph. Let's speak about the fourth one, but real fast. Klipas Haravia Nikras Klipas Noga. The fourth one is called Noga. Sheruba Ra Vyeshba Rak Ma'atov, which has a lot of Ra and a little bit of Tov. Actually, I'm seeing that this is going to perhaps complicate things. So, Mitzvah Hashem, we will pick this up again next week. Have a great day.